You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Rob Ferret. And Wisconsin candidates for the U.S. Senate are set to debate tonight, and you can hear it live right here. The Wisconsin Broadcasters Association debate starts at 7. Listen to an hour of the candidates, plus analysis after it wraps, right here on the Ideas Network and online at WPR.org. Now the Biden administration is facing several legal challenges over its proposal to forgive certain student loan debts. This week, the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty added another lawsuit on behalf of the Brown County Taxpayers Association. Just yesterday, a federal judge in Green Bay dismissed that suit. We're going to get into the plaintiff's arguments, where the suit goes from here, and then later dissect some of the constitutional issues surrounding the debt consolidation plan. And if you'd like to join us, we invite you to the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Our guest is Rick Essenberg, president of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. And Rick, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, what was the reason that the Brown County Taxpayers Association filed suit against the president's student debt relief proposal?
Well, what the president has done here is really extraordinary. He has undertaken to wipe out about $1 trillion worth of student debt, adding to the national deficit, without clear congressional authorization. This is a blatant violation of our separation of powers. And it's something that I think the courts need to look at. Now, the problem has been that while a layperson listening to your radio show might think, well, when the president does something that spends money unlawfully, then taxpayers should be able to go to court and sue and have the rightness or wrongness of that adjudicated. But federal courts have been very, very reluctant to ever grant taxpayers standing. They have required a different type of injury to litigants. And so there have been other people who have brought lawsuits. They have tried creative ways around this standing problem. But each time that this has happened, these cases have been filed, the administration has changed the program in order to defeat the standing of the challengers. They do not want to have to defend this action in court because their legal arguments are very, very weak. So we decided to go at it directly, and we're relying on what we admit are some older cases, which recognized certain types of taxpayer standing to challenge a constitutional impropriety in a spending or taxing provision itself. We fully admit that we are asking the law to be used in ways that it hasn't been used recently, but we think in the context of a $1 trillion program, it's very important to the people of this country to have the legality of that program assessed by the courts.
So when Rick,
we're not surprised that, you know, Judge Griesbach said, look, you got to, if you're going to succeed here, you got to take it up to a higher court. It's not something that I can do as a trial judge.
So this is about taxpayers having standing. And generally, from a layperson's perspective, Rick Essenberg, is this because the taxpayers haven't actually paid any money towards this yet, so they don't have standing? Do they have to wait until it becomes a cost for the taxpayer to have a place in the courts for this?
No, it's not that. It's that the federal courts have been reluctant to recognize that type of injury. And so it's in contrast to state courts, where here in Wisconsin, we do have relatively broad taxpayer standing, but federal courts have been somewhat more restrictive. But
so,
it's not a question of whether or not the taxes have been paid already. It's really a question of assessing the type of injury that the plaintiff claims to have suffered.
If you're, and it sounds like you are planning to appeal, correct? The
absolutely.
Okay.
And well, we've already filed an appeal.
All right. So you are appealing. And in the event that you were successful in your appeal, could this change legal precedent about taxpayer standing and federal lawsuits going forward?
Well, we think it would, but only in the narrowest of circumstances, where it would in a case where the challenge is to the action which itself mandated the spending of money or the taxation of money. It's not simply a question of taxpayers not approving of what the government was doing with their money. We also feel that And we've also argued that the part of the problem here, and sort of borrowing from the West Virginia versus EPA decision last year, that this is really a major question. I mean, this is not something that is sort of a minor dispute about a relatively small amount of money. I mean, this is a huge amount of money. This is a very, very significant unilateral action by the president. You know, one of the things I would caution your listeners is not to form their position with respect to lawsuits like this simply on whether they like student loan forgiveness or not.
You're making a legal argument here, and a legal standing argument, and the role that the president would play, whether it's a unitary executive or still needs some support from the legislature. If the legislature Absolutely. Were to support student debt relief and the president were to sign it into law, would the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty have any opportunity to sue?
No, we wouldn't bring the case because, the point is not whether student loans should be forgiven or not. I don't think this is a particularly good use of $1 trillion. I think that there's a lot better ways in which that money can be used. But certainly Congress would have the authority to forgive these loans. But it is Congress that has the authority, and not the president acting unilaterally.
Rick Essenberg, president of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, joining us. And Rick, one of the arguments I've heard in the president on the president's behalf would be the HEROES Act of 2003, which, as I understand it, provides some authority to the federal government to modify federal student loan programs during national emergencies. And that might include canceling federal student loan debt, or is that does that give the president any protection as you see it?
Well, no, I don't think so. And of course, neither did the Justice Department until right before the president announced it. It changed its position. The problem is this: the HEROES Act was designed to allow targeted student loan forgiveness for military people and first responders. It was passed in the wake of 9/11, where we knew that there were people who were going to be deployed in various ways, and we didn't want them to default on their student loan. Here you've got a situation where the president is simply saying, well, there was something that happened here that may have made it harder to pay these student loans. They didn't have to actually pay them because we suspended repayment. It's not ongoing now because I've declared that the COVID pandemic to be over. And so it's really an extraordinary expansion that really, I think, goes well beyond what the HEROES Act ever intended. And, last year in the West Virginia case, the Supreme Court made clear that our constitutional separation of powers requires that at least for major questions, and this is a major question, there needs to be clear congressional authorization for executive action. Congress does not, as the saying goes, hide mountains and molehills. And the notion that something that was passed to accommodate the specific interest of first responders in the wake of a terrorist attack can now be used to allow the president to forgive student loans every time he thinks something that has happened that makes them harder to pay, I think would be a usurpation of the legislative power by the president, and something that nobody should want to permit. Because, even if you love Joe Biden and you love this program and you love the things that he's doing, I guarantee you that at some point in the future, there will be a president who you do not like and who you will not want to have this type of power.
Would you take this case all the way to the Supreme Court? As
you
mentioned, okay, so you would continue to appeal until you get to the very end of our justice system here. What about?
I think that's probably where this is. If this is salient, that's probably where it's going to go.
What about the lawsuit from the six Republican attorneys general, state's attorneys general?
Well, this is an instance where they tried to work around this standing problem by saying that look, we have. We have state student loan servicing agencies that are servicing these loans. If you reduce the amount of the loans, those servicing agencies will make less money. And so therefore, we are harmed in a way which goes beyond our status as taxpayers or simply as states. And in response to that, the administration said, okay, we're not going to forgive the loans for the people who are whose debt is being serviced by you, and which is a quite cynical thing, right? Having said that there is this national emergency that requires student loan debt forgiveness for people who meet these certain criteria, it is decided to throw these people under the bus, these people who are having their loans serviced by these six states, in order to prevent the legality of this program from being assessed by a court.
Rick, thanks as always for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you. Take care.
Rick Essenberg, president of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, talking with him about his organization's legal challenge to a federal student loan forgiveness problem program and the dismissal of which they are planning to appeal all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court if necessary. Joining us now is Eric Casper, professor of political science and pre-law advisor at UW-Eau Claire, where he's also director of the Menard Center for Constitutional Studies. Eric, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
And if you would, start by sharing with us why the judge in Green Bay, a federal judge, dismissed Will's lawsuit yesterday, the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty.
Yeah, well, if you look at the lawsuit itself, one of the preliminary questions is, do the plaintiffs have standing? And as a general matter, as with the U.S. Constitution, there would need to be, under Article 3 of the Constitution, there would have to be an actual case or controversy, according to the language of Article 3, which includes this requirement then of parties having standing. And so the question is, what is the harm that would be caused? And as was discussed a little bit here earlier in the hour, there are these precedents from the U.S. Supreme Court on taxpayer standing. And the traditional approach from the court, back to a case called Frothingham versus Mellon in 1923, is that taxpayers generally do not have standing, and in part because the courts are afraid of, if every question about budgets were then brought into the courts to be litigated constitutionally, that it would overwhelm the courts. There's a major exception that's been found to that over the years, which is that Supreme Court, going back to the 1960s, has found that if their taxpayers are challenging money spent by the government on religious purposes, that under the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment, they can achieve standing. But Supreme Court has been reluctant to expand taxpayer standing to other areas over the years.
And as we heard from the president of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, that he would be willing to take this case all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, which is, I would understand it, Eric, could create some new legal precedent. And what would that legal precedent look like were the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty to be successful in their lawsuit?
Well, it depends. If the U.S. Supreme Court decided to revisit some of its case law on taxpayer standing to open up, so to speak, the ability of someone to file a lawsuit as a taxpayer based on their view that the U.S. Constitution is being violated by the spending, it would depend how much they wanted to open it up. They could potentially lay down a rule that makes it so that you could see quite a number of challenges, or they could open it up to just, one other area like they did with the Establishment Clause and allowing taxpayer standing there. In recent years, the majority on the Supreme Court has not sent a signal in any cases that I'm aware of that they want to see taxpayer standing opened up in that way. And if anything, more recent cases in recent decades from the Supreme Court suggests that if they're going to move in any direction on taxpayer standing at the federal level, it may be to close it up even more. It remains to be seen if they take this case, or if they take a number of these cases that are in the courts right now, they could change direction on that question.
Eric Casper, our guest, professor of political science and pre-law advisor at UW-Eau Claire, where he is also the director of the Menard Center for Constitutional Studies. And I want to move past this idea of standing for a moment to get to the question of congressional delegation of authority. I'd asked Rick Eskenberg about the HEROES Act of 2003 and what cover that may provide for the president's plan for student debt relief. Where does the constitutional law put us here?
Yeah, so assuming that you can get past the hurdle of standing, and as you mentioned earlier in the program, there are in terms of what we see in other states, in some of these other lawsuits, there are others who are filing lawsuits besides taxpayers. And so even if we don't change the law in terms of taxpayer standing, this case can get potentially into court based on other plaintiffs. I mean, the big question here is, or at least the next big question, is the delegation of authority from Congress to the executive branch. And there is a quite a bit of case law going back two centuries where the Supreme Court has said that Congress does have the ability to delegate some of its authority as long as they provide enough details and they're clear and specific enough with the goals and there are intelligible principles that will guide, in particular, the executive branch of how to exercise that authority. The question here with the HEROES Act then is how do we interpret the language in that act that says this can be done in terms of waiving or modifying the applicable provisions related to student aid programs in the case of a national emergency? What is a national emergency? And that's what, you know, the two parties would be, assuming that we get to the merits of the case, the two parties would be arguing in court whether or not there has been a national emergency as contemplated by the HEROES Act that would allow the executive branch to exercise this power.
Let's go to the phones here at 1-800-642-1234, where Jerry in Illinois is standing by. Jerry, you're on the air with Eric Casper.
Eric, Jerry Podrazo, Democratic candidate for Illinois 45th Senate District. My youngsters went to university. My mom provided a Illinois self-funded scholarship, kind of the same kind of program as Wisconsin. I don't have an issue about this because I hear these attorneys tripping all over themselves with this constitutional noise. Here's the bottom line on this, I feel. For 10 years, if you look back at your checking account statement, your credit card statement, your savings account statement, we were getting paid 0.25%, 0.5% on those investments for years. The credit card statements were skyrocketing, 18-20%. The individuals that had student loans during that time were paying a high interest.
And I appreciate the call, Jerry. We're short on time, but that doesn't seem to have entered into the debate or at least legal discussion of what's happening here, Eric.
Well, I think it's important to point out the distinction between, you know, the policy question, does what happens here, is it good or bad policy versus is it constitutional? And I mean, that, as I was pointed out earlier in the hour, if Congress were to pass something that the president signed into law to do this exact same thing, then that delegation of power question wouldn't be there. This is really the only question is if Congress doesn't act to do something, can the executive branch now act on its own to do this? But I mean, to the caller's point, you know, with those real concerns about student debt that have arisen over the years, I mean, that in and of itself could be reason for Congress to take action. But if Congress doesn't take action, then what is constitutional for the executive branch to do without Congress doing something new? They would have to rely on some sort of authority here that's been delegated by Congress in the past.
And Eric, going back to the HEROES Act for a moment, which has been used at least by some legal scholars as a cover for the president's proposal for some student debt relief, how have the courts seen the scope of the HEROES Act and what it can and can't do?
Well, I'm not aware of application here to this specific question in terms of the you know, what we're looking at in terms of this type of student debt relief. I mean, I can tell you that, you know, the definition of a national emergency, it's like a lot of other terms that get used in the law. You know, if you could define that, I think, as the way the plaintiffs in this lawsuit are defining it, this is not the equivalent of some sort of post 9/11 or kind of wartime situation. But because the language does have a little bit of subjectivity in it, I'm sure that, you know, the government on the defense on this lawsuit would point to the fact that, you know, the COVID-19 pandemic was quite an unprecedented period of time, and that you saw a major disruption to our, you know, our way of life and to people's employment and their finances in many cases. And so that's why they're making the argument, and we're seeing this in some of the lower courts now and other places around the country, that it does fit that notion of a national emergency.
Hey, Eric, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
Eric Casper is professor of political science and pre-law advisor at UW-Eau Claire, where he's also director of the Menard Center for Constitutional Studies. We talked with him about the dismissal of Will's lawsuit challenging the Biden administration's student loan debt forgiveness plan and what sort of legal standing the president might have to get that plan pushed through. And we also looked at some of the constitutional challenges that the plan's been facing. I want to invite you to continue the conversation all weekend long, if you like, on the Ideas Network Facebook page. You can email us anytime, ideas@WPR.org. And let us know what you think about the president's proposal, what taxpayers standing have, what taxpayers have in terms of standing in the courts, and whether or not you can see the constitutional arguments being made for and against and the potential consequences of what could come with new legal precedents as a result of this case.